He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Dada.
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine, Wednesday? It's Wednesday. Wednesday evening by Harrison Fagan of SB Nation. I hope I said it before. I'm Anthony Irwin of Lakers Daily, just to make sure I clarify that. Speaking of Laker Daily, Lakers Daily. People have been asking about the article that I've been teasing here on the show. I promise once that article goes live, and the plan is for it to go live here in the next 24 to 48 hours, depending on when a certain bit of news drops. when that article goes live afterward, as part of the live reaction show to that bit of news, I will explain why it's taken so long for that article to drop. So just a heads up on what happened there. But just know, whenever it does go live, I wrote that thing last Thursday. So it will be like a week old by the time it drops or whatever. But I think it will still have very pertinent information. But all that aside, Harrison, how are you holding up, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's nice to not be like fully on sort of coach firing watch and sort of my new position. You know, I'm like, I'm observing, I'm monitoring from afar, you know, but it's like, I'm not sitting there. I'm like, okay, wait, is the pre-write ready to go? You know, it's like, it's kind of nice. It's not like, you know, I've been through a number of these, you know, as a chief Lakers blogger type guy. And, you know, it's nice to not be like, okay, like, do I have, like, how quickly can I access the Byron Scott fired pre-write link? You know, like on my phone, like, can I do it if I'm out on this trail walk with my wife? It's like, no, you know, if it happens out there, then I'll just, you know, I'll call in and I'll chat with Anthony, you know, in an hour. But I'm doing great. This is sort of, as I think most people know, this is about the outcome of that series that I expected. And so, you know, off to Cancun. I should have had a Cancun backdrop. I apologize for that.
You know, I think we can have one. Yeah, I think if you look at settings on your stream.
Oh no, I definitely could. I just did not. So
let
I
me see. Can I have it? Where's my
major prop comedy oversight on my part?
It's not there. It's no longer there. That's too bad. Yeah.
I feel bad for the people that you're too much of a coward to stand on business and release this article. Like you're waiting for the funeral to like show up and give the speech. You know, you could get out ahead of this.
I don't know. Like, I also don't want to report that wrong. Cause here's the thing. Here's the how I've spent my day is like you and I talked this morning about when we should go live. And I said, I basically cleared my day, you know, waiting for this news to drop. And, you know, and like, by the way, it's not that I'm like dancing on the guy's funeral that much. It's more like
Anthony, he's going to be getting paid planning. Like $8 million to like not work for 2 years. So I do, you know, it's like, yeah, does it suck to get fired? I'm sure, but he's going to be fine.
We've all been fired. Like it's almost everybody at some point in your life is going to get fired. And so like, this just happens to be his turn.
It's just, you get wisdom and lessons and you know, this will be a lesson. And
but anyway, so we talked this morning. We messaged back and forth this morning about like our plan for today. And I said, I basically cleared out the day waiting for this to go live so that you and I can go live. Is that okay with you? And you said, I only have this one thing. And we went back and forth. And that was, you know, and eventually, like with the news not dropping, we just said, okay, well, I got to wait for the kids to go down. And now here we are. But over the course of the day, because of the way that my brain works, Remember the analogy I made back when they had Russell Westbrook still on the team and like at the beginning of the offseason,
procedured that entire season from my brain. So no, I do not remember.
But like we like remember that whole summer it began with like, okay, well, finally they're gonna this has to be line one, priority one of their offseason is finally moving off of this guy. It was a disaster of a first season. He can't possibly enter next season on the roster again. And then like over the course of the summer, it was like, oh my God. And the analogy or the comparison that I used was, you know, watching two cars back up into each other in a parking lot, you know, like, oh, come on. They're not going to hit.
You could have just said watching Mia drive.
See, now I remember that. Spent that entire offseason shitting on your wife's driving.
Yeah.
But I basically said, like, you know, I said, this is funny. The Lakers had Russell Westbrook. Jarvis goes, I don't remember. But yeah, I basically, you know, spent that whole offseason. We all spent that whole offseason saying, like, all right, this guy can't possibly be a Laker anymore. Like, it didn't work. It's not going to work. There's no way to make a $47 million Russell Westbrook work in any...
Anthony, like, I had a whole bit that whole offseason making fun of how dumb the idea to bring everyone back was.
You're right. You're right.
Because it was like every week, it's like, the Lakers don't feel any pressure to move off of Russ. Why would they? Things can't go worse than they did last year.
The season of run it back. I remember that now. So, but basically, over the course of today, that's the same spot that I've been in. It's like, I'm watching those two same cars, you know, they're both sitting right there in that same Costco parking lot, couple Toyota Siennas. They can't quite see that one spot right behind them. And they're now backing up. They have began their slow path towards each other. And I'm just looking at these two minivans that, you know, you're like, no, they can't possibly do this. They aren't actually going to do this. And from what I've heard, by the way, and for what it's worth, I'm still told that in all likelihood, Darvin Ham is going to be fired. And
what? Sorry, it took me a second to process that. Wow.
I kind of picture like Darvin sitting there like, what are you guys waiting for? Like, what are we doing? Yeah. Like, and meanwhile, Zini's like, what if we do the staring contest thing, maybe he'll resign.
Yeah. So, okay. You know? So can you clear out for a second and let me cook on this?
I will.
Because like, I think we've sort of prefaced it enough and talked about, like, we all know this is coming. You have the headline thing up there. Do the Lakers think they're fooling anyone? For anyone watching on YouTube, by the way, subscribe to Lakers Lounge. How's that plugged?
Got a kid.
You know, everyone knows what is going to happen here. This is, I think the Russ analogy is a great one, because if this goes on much longer, it's going to be just as silly as that was. You know, to be honest, like, I think you actually had a very funny theory today that they were waiting until the games tonight so that less people would be able to write about it. Like, you know, the national people were focused on the playoff games or whatever, and they just like drop it during Clippers match. Like, fourth quarter, Luka hits a giant shot, and Woj is just like, yeah, Darvin Ham's been dismissed.
Rob was like, quick, Woj, go now. Go.
Which, like, my guess is that's not how they'll actually do it, because I think Genie is sort of such a good league citizen in terms of, like, they hung the IST banner because the league wanted them to, and they wanted to be a good corporate partner or whatever. And so generally the league frowns upon like leaking stuff in the middle of games. And so my guess is that they will wait for like a non-game day or whatever, or something like that, or, you know, do it earlier in the day or whatever. But I think the real reason for all of this, and I sort of got into this with you, you know, like, I mean, number one, the jokes of like, even Ham is probably surprised he's not fired at this point, you know, like, probably, you know, he was talking up there. He's like, you know, it's been a hell of a 2 years, hell of a front office up there.
I'm always going to remember this place. I'm always going to remember this team.
It's like, you know, hell of a contract there, though, that gave you this opt-out language.
Just
nothing you could do about that. Just, you know, you gotta give a hat tip to the guys on the other legal negotiating team. But no, like, I think, you know, they're waiting. The real reason they're waiting is, again, my theory on this always goes back to, what are they overcorrecting to or reacting to from last time? And what happened last time? Everybody got really mad at them for firing Frank with like basically like 30 seconds left in the Nuggets game. Like, to be honest, we could go back. I'm not even sure if the game was over when Woj dropped.
I don't think
Frank Vogel was fired. I don't think it was either. but I could be wrong. But either way, they did not wait very long, and they took some criticism in coaching circles for that. And so
remember, Frank had to answer for it, like in his post game presser. Remember, he was
a reporter.
I think it was Wojcicki. I asked him, like, hey, this is awkward, but
you remember his quote?
No, I don't.
I haven't been told shit. It was like the one time Frank cursed his entire tenure on the
he was so fed up. Remember that one? Yeah. That was the season where
and then they had to ask like Austin Reeves and like Malik Monk about it, you know, because they were the only guys that was like 2-on-5 out there. I think
Mac
McClung got some minutes that
Austin,
night.
Like, Mac, Austin and his camp had forgotten that. They were like, Austin just had like a triple double to wrap up the season. Like,
yeah,
like put a cap on this incredible rookie like campaign at the end of the year. And instead of being asked about that triple double, he had to answer questions about his coach being fired.
Yeah. Like, Austin, great performance out there. Do you think if you would have done more, you could have saved Frank? Do you feel like it's your fault? Do you feel like maybe if you did that earlier in the season, he would have been able to play you more and justify it, you know, a little earlier? Maybe you guys could have gotten it together for a run. How much of the, you know, they're like walking up to the kid in the divorce and they're like, how much of this do you think is your fault that mommy and daddy don't get along?
Blink 182 is playing in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So like, I think on some level they received, I think you could say justified criticism for how they handled that last one. Probably not the most tactful way to fire the coach that had won a title for you like 2 years before. Again, like if you are a Lakers sort of faithful and you're a Lakers person, you could say, hey, we didn't leave him hanging. We ripped the Band-Aid off and he was just out. He didn't have to wonder about his status, whatever. If you were being charitable, you could say that they did that. In this case, they are doing the opposite because of how much criticism they got for that. And so, you know, Rob is sitting there in his office. He's like, you know, really got to thoughtfully consider this. You know, Kurt is just, he's got like the Professor X thing going. Like, he's just like, you know, sitting there. Oh man, hands on his temples. Like, this is just such a hard decision. I don't know what we're going to do. Jeannie's sitting there. Like, do you think if we make him wait long enough, he'll like quit and then we don't have to pay, you know? And there's just like, there's these like sort of competing thoughts going around in the office and everybody's like really very seriously deliberating and trying to really think about this, but we all know what's going to happen. And I think in the end, they're going to end up firing him, like, you know, a couple, whether it's days or weeks or whatever from now. And then they're going to get criticized for leaving him hanging for as long as they did. And then the next time they're going to fire the coach with 30 seconds left in the game. And, you know, just time is a flat circle. And so, I mean, I really think that this is more of a, like, we just don't want to disrespect him type of thing. And, you know, like, and, you know, if you're trying to become more attractive to veteran head coaches that you're likely going to be looking to hire, because again, they're going to go the opposite from the first timer this time, you would think, unless they go with JJ Redick, you know, they're going to go with, they're going to want to be seen well in coaching circles and maybe not embarrassing the guy and making him answer questions about his own firing at the post game press conference is a way that like more kind of serious coaches maybe take you a little bit more seriously when you're interviewing them and don't feel like this is a bad place for a head coach.
Remember also, as part of the whole, like, their appeal to future coaches conversation, remember how Frank was hired in the first place, where they lowballed Ty Lue, a championship-level head coach. They wanted to tie his contract to LeBron James's, which is looks even dumber now in hindsight, now that we know that LeBron is now getting ready to sign his third Lakers contract this summer. Yes. And then, so you had that. And then, so Ty Lue backs out also because they wanted to force Jason Kidd on him. And then we're able to force Jason Kidd on Frank Vogel. And when they did that, everybody knew that the hope there was like, not even like, not kidding here. The hope there from the Lakers was that it wouldn't work out with Frank because they wanted to hire Kidd. Frank was fourth on the totem pole when they were actually interviewing coaches. It was Lue. It was Monty.
He wasn't even in the initial interview round, if I remember correctly. He was in the secondary, oh shit, we messed up with Ty Lue interview round.
Right. And then Monty took the job
and
in Phoenix.
He was under consideration to be Ty Lue's lead assistant, which, I mean, if in retrospect, how monster of a coaching staff would that have been?
Yeah, would have been expensive. But like, they basically, you know, so they wanted to hire Jason Kidd. But remember, we at Silver Screen and Roll wrote about Jason Kidd's background, right? And finally he got asked about, and there was too much heat at that point to hire him as their head coach. So instead they make him the highest paid assistant coach with the hope that he would move up a seat
over the course of that season.
I think a much more respectful message to people who might have been offended by that.
Right.
Obviously.
But like
totally different. Stood on morals there.
It was really clear that they didn't believe in Frank Vogel. And then he messes around and wins a championship. And the year after that, he was going to enter the season as a lame duck candidate.
Was 2 years later. It was 2 years later. Cause the year after that was the Dennis Schroeder, Mark Gasol year, where that would have been Frank's second year as head coach. And they might've repeated if AD doesn't tear his groin in the first round.
Yeah. And then
the next year he was going to go in as a lame duck, and they gave him the token 1 year extension that they like Friday news dumped.
Yep. All of that is to say their treatment of Frank Vogel, their hiring process that went into hiring Frank Vogel, the hiring process with Ham that was also kind of jumbled and quick, if I remember correctly. This is still a relatively inexperienced front office, because the only experience that you have in the front office is Rob Pelinka in that position. Like, they don't have anybody else. So,
well, Kurt.
Well, but he doesn't have any front office experience.
Not true. He's been basically running the Lakers for the last several years.
By the way, just fair warning. I don't know if you guys heard the last, lightning crack rippling across my house right now. I am like basically in the middle of a biblical storm that is going on right outside my window. And if my internet cuts out, Harrison, good luck. Godspeed. All of those things.
Darvin Ham learned to master control of the elements, and he's just coming to take your house out. You know.
And actually, I actually recorded a little quick thing here because Avery was scared by the lightning. So I told her that if she was brave, that she could come on the show. I'm not kidding. We recorded this little thing. It's a 30-second little clip here of Avery explaining lightning. All right. So Avery is going to explain lightning.
So why they're lightning? Because they're bowling.
Who's bowling?
The Angels.
Okay, the Angels are bowling.
And if they have a lightning, that means they have a strike.
A strike.
Yeah, and that means they have all of the points.
Okay, I like it. I like the theory. Who told you that?
Mommy.
Mommy? Good job, Mommy. All right, say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, I value Dr. Jen's expertise in the medical realm. I don't know that you need to bring her on to explain the weather.
It's legitimately the carrot that I used to keep her in bed tonight, to keep Avery in her bed tonight. And I told her that if you're brave enough to come on my show, you are brave enough to sleep through a storm. And
modern
and,
day parenting, it's like, I'll let you be an influencer for 5 minutes if you go to bed on time.
Avery just graduated to Nepo baby. Also, by the way, the next time, and right now I'm currently getting kind of roasted for my Mike Conley, D'Angelo Russell take. I'm thinking about putting that on Twitter and being like, this is the man you guys are roasting. This is the father of children that you guys
need to get some like old fashioned, like Macy's style, like family portraits, you know, like the ones that like everybody's like dressed up. You got a little turtleneck on, whatever. And then like you can tweet it out. It's like you and your loving fan, you know, like it's like, oh, this is who you're being mean to, by the way.
Yeah, we probably should. I mean, we need to get those done anyway for the house, but it should be content as well. Getting back to like the whole treatment of coaches and all of that stuff. Part of this conversation here again, like, and this feels dickish to do to Darvin, but again, like the guy's still going to get paid his money. He's going to be just fine. But, and then on the other side of this, he's still going to be one of the more coveted assistant coach candidates, on the other side of this as well. So, it doesn't feel great to do this, but I still like have spent a lot of the day thinking about coaching replacements. And you mentioned JJ Redick, and obviously there's hope internally that the the Clippers flame out and they fire Ty Lue as a result of it, which probably not great to keep leaking that. Given that the Clippers have enough money to just pay Ty Lue to not go to the Lakers.
Not even a coach for them. They're just going to pay him to not take the Lakers money. That's how much money Steve Ballmer has.
He could. You know what? He could probably pay Ty Lue more to not coach the Lakers than Genie can afford to pay him to coach the Lakers.
Almost assuredly true. Like, if he just really wanted to be spiteful, he could. I mean, he's like one of the richest people alive. He could do whatever he wants. Like, he, you know.
No, it's like the first season of Billions, right? Where he was like, what's the point of having fuck you money if you never say fuck you? that would be a giant set of middle fingers directed at the team across the hall. But yeah, I have spent, and it's kind of a conversation among a lot of people kind of behind the scenes, is like, what would you look for in a replacement here? And for me, like you mentioned Frank Vogel, we've talked a lot about Darvin Ham, and the thing that's kind of driven me insane in both of those cases is that the Lakers don't seem to have any idea on how to fill out a coaching staff that, you know, makes up for some of the deficiencies of the head coach. Same goes for Luke Walton, right?
So again, time is a flat circle, because they let Luke assemble his whole staff. And then, you know, again, that was a different front office, to be fair. Robin Magic came in midway through that, but then they're like, hey, maybe you should hire some veteran assistants. And he's like, hey, maybe not. And, you know, then they fired him and they're like, okay, Frank, we're picking your assistants. And then people didn't like that. So they're like, okay, Darvin, hire whoever you want, except Rasheed Wallace. That's where we draw the line. We're not putting Nikola Jokic in pickle rolls, you know? And so they let him do whatever they, you know, Darvin, I actually think, could have probably done well if he had like a Terry Stotts type figure, you know, like someone who's like an experienced head coach, Lionel Hollins back in the day. You know, I think he's sort of out of coaching or whatever, but someone who's been a head coach before that just can sort of help walk you through some of these things. It's kind of funny that the Lakers were a lot better when Quinn, you know, and made seemingly better adjustments or whatever when Quinn Snyder was like an unpaid assistant during the first half of the year to Darvin Ham before getting the Hawks job. So it's just, you know, I think he would have been well served and was sort of done a disservice in some ways from the Lakers by them not trying to get, you know, a couple more experienced voices. But again, they didn't want him to feel threatened. They didn't want him to feel meddled with like Frank was, because everyone criticized them for meddling with Frank and hiring his staff. And so, again, it's just like, now we're going to go through this thing and maybe they should try and, you know, force the coaching staff to be filled out with like a couple more veteran voices if they go with like JJ Redick or Rajon Rondo or Chris Paul or whoever. But, you know, who knows what they're actually going to do.
And that also,
actually, like, I do. They're going to overreact to the last round of criticism, and like they're going to pick all of this next coach's assistants. Rob's interviewed a lot of coaches at this point. You know, he probably has a lot of insight on who's good, who's not, you know.
So many coaching interviews. Yeah. You'd think he'd be better at this by now. But like I that kind of underlines a kind of central issue with the Lakers, is like, rather than focus on the actual process itself, the focus is on the reaction to their previous processes or their previous decisions. And like meddling with Frank Vogel, a former head coach, or meddling with Ty Lue, a former championship head coach, and trying to force an assistant coach on him, who, by the way, the whole reason Jason Kidd was supposed to be on that staff, or the reason that Rob Pelinka wanted Jason Kidd to be on that staff, was to spy for Rob Pelinka. So like, for Ty Lue,
well,
like,
also to be fair, say what you will about the Kidd hire, like I wasn't a fan of it at the time, or you know, for just more reasons than just basketball, but they did bring him in because it was someone alongside, it's someone that makes up for the deficiencies of your coach. Frank Vogel doesn't necessarily have that powerful voice to hold LeBron and AD accountable, and Jason Kidd was a guy that they looked up to, respected, that LeBron played with on the Redeem team. You know, they wanted that sort of former player voice as someone that could, you know, be in the ear of those guys as well.
And we'll see what that looks like with this upcoming hire, right?
And like, which process worked out better? I would argue the Lakers coaching staff made a lot of great moves during that first season. You know,
it's inarguable.
Say what you will about the process to get there, but there was a lot of brain power in that room between, you know, Lionel Hollins, Frank Vogel, Phil Handy, you know.
You're absolutely right, Harrison. You're absolutely, they shouldn't have ditched the process. They shouldn't have overreacted to the people criticizing the process and been like, okay. Because it's even more important to do that with the inexperienced first time, like the first time 100%. Head coach in Darvin Ham.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's like they didn't realize that the reason they were getting criticized is because they already made it very clear that this guy was not their first option. And then they were like sort of meddling with his staff to make it even more clear they didn't trust him.
Yeah.
Where and, then with like also, Darvin Ham, like, they're like, yeah, do whatever you want. Except Rasheed Wallace. Sorry. That's where we draw the line.
Which I would love to know more about that. I keep forgetting to kind of ask around, like, why they said no to Rasheed Wallace, other than, like,
my theory is no joke that they saw Tim/Krangis's thread on his high school coaching exploits and were just like, wait, never mind. No, sorry.
I mean, like, Rasheed is also kind of a loose cannon, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I with a first time head coach, I could understand maybe saying, like, that guy could eventually become a distraction for you. And again, like, I don't have as big of a problem with meddling with Darvin Ham, because clearly Darvin needed the meddling. Like, this season, the front office probably could have meddled more and been like, hey, we signed Rui to a really big contract. We signed Jared Vanderbilt to a really big contract, and Austin Reeves as well. And for that matter, D'Angelo Russell. Could we maybe play the guys that we just invested a shit ton of money in instead of Taurean Prince, who is making $5 million this year? Like, and I know, like, this is, I think, one of the spots that Aaron and I disagree most, is because the Dodgers front office does meddle. Like, they do at some time, at some points, consult with, air quotes, you know, Doc, and they'll talk to him about, like, hey, maybe don't bunt in that spot, or, you know, maybe that pitcher should have been used in this other spot. And there's this kind of two-way street of communication there that exists that I think makes Dave Roberts a better coach and ensures that the roster is utilized in the way that the front office envisioned it when they put the roster together, right? And like, that was the thing that, like, with Darvin this year, it was clear. Again, I don't want to share too much from the article that's dropping, but, like, people internally were like, how is there this obvious a lapse in communication between Rob and Darvin when they were the two people who put the roster together? It was super weird, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to some degree, I think, you know, coaches almost always feel differently in the summer than they do once they actually get back into the gym with guys and stuff like that. Yeah. There's always optimism about what everyone could be versus, and then you find out what they actually are. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't align with what you actually value. But, you know, I mean, getting back to your larger point, I think you're absolutely right, because there's no one that I trust more to give coaching advice to whoever the next coach is than Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis. I think, you know, you got the dream team right there. Let them set the strategies. I think you're good to go.
Unironically, that is the one spot where I would say Kurt Rambis is well positioned to give good advice, because
he certainly
knows
what not to do.
A very good assistant coach
tenure. Oh, sorry, I thought. Took a lot of lessons during those seasons.
Tons and, like, nonstop lessons.
Tons and like historic amounts of lessons were learned.
But the, while all of this is going on, by the way, and this is the second bullet point that's there on your right, for those of you who are watching live on YouTube, please do hit that subscribe button, hit the like button too. That really helps, with helping these videos up the old algorithm, Al Gore's rhythm, as I like to call it. And a really weird thing took place today, a really weird report from Dave McMenamin today, saying that the Lakers were holding their player exit interviews, meaning, you know, these are the conversations that players have on their way out the door, so that in some cases they an organization says, like, hey, we'd like you to work on this. In some cases they say, D'Angelo, it's been fun. Hopefully we'll you know, we wish you all the luck in Brooklyn next year. Like, you know, depending on the player and depending on the conversation.
He's just going to keep circling those teams around the league. He's going back to Brooklyn, but, and then he's going to play in Golden State for like three games, and then back to Minnesota.
But it was really weird, though, Dave McMenamin offering up that detail. Usually, your head coach is involved in those conversations if he is still employed. And I seemed like I was joking about it on online today, but I did legitimately ask, like, the people I talked to, was Darvin there? Like, was Darvin?
I would be very curious. Did you get an answer? I would be very curious to know that.
All right. Without getting too specific here, everybody is being very, very careful on this front. And they're being very, very careful with any information as it pertains to this, even though everybody already knows where this is going. So no, I did not get a hard line answer, a hard line response, but I
seems
feel
unlikely
like
is my guess that he was in there.
No, like I feel like the lack of a response is the response, right? Like if Darvin
if
was there,
you can't just say our coach. Yes, our coach was in the exit interview.
Right, like that was. I feel like, you know, it's either it's a yes
Although
or no
actually,
question.
I'm pretty sure the Lakers did exit interviews with Luke Walton there, if I remember correctly, and then fired him afterwards.